Hello and welcome to the first true off-season edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen, and I'm joined today by good friend Matt Vladianos. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing awesome.
So, Matt, it has been since the Super Bowl, since this podcast was last in action. Your great podcast, the Blue Chip Scouting Podcast. It is not the off-season for you. You guys are churning out some great content. You just had a really interesting quarterback episode yesterday that you guys talked a little bit about some prospects, including a guy I was not as, you know, bullish on in Jordan Love, but you guys are doing a great job over there. Just wanted to start out by telling you guys that I don't get to listen to every one of them, but they're pretty good when I get the chance.
Yeah, Dalton and I really enjoy just kind of it's really just an opportunity to get out and just talk ball, and we record real early in the morning, so it's kind of our fresh takes, full energized. We both had some coffee. Dalton wakes up entirely too early, but we really enjoy what we've been doing. And we've been seeing a spike in listeners pretty recently, which is also nice to see that our work is getting noticed a little bit, and we've had some awesome guests on lately, the Athletic Dane Brugler, Jordan Reed from the Draft Network, Ray GQ, who's a Devy guy. So a lot of awesome, awesome guys that I've been fortunate enough to get to talk to.
Yeah, it's awesome. You guys do a great job over there. So I thought today would be just as good a day as any to get back in. There's been a lot of off-season news that has gone down today. So a little bit about what we're going to talk about. Schefter bomb, I guess, was dropped earlier this evening about a new playoff format for the NFL potentially coming in 2020, courtesy of Roger Goodell. By the way, Matt, a very happy birthday to Roger Goodell. This is the man's 61st birthday. So
the big 6-1.
So I am actually doing this podcast, as longtime podcast listeners know. The goal is to one day get the robot that is Roger Goodell onto this podcast to ask him truly outlandish questions and have him give truly robotic answers. So a happy birthday to our dear commissioner, to our great leader, Commissioner Roger Goodell. Hopefully he enjoys it. But he dropped some news on us earlier today that has a lot of different opinions coming out, Matt, and it's this new playoff format. So basically, for people who haven't seen it, the way it breaks down is there will be 7 teams per conference. They are completely eliminating the second bye team. So it will look a lot like Major League Soccer, which is so weird that I'm bringing this up on a football podcast. I don't know if you've ever watched the sport, Matt, but Major League Soccer, I follow it pretty closely in the offseason. But basically, what the NFL is doing is adopting that playoff method, which is the number one seed will get a bye, and then I believe it's the 3 and 6 seed that play each other, and then the 2 and 7, and then the 4 and 5 will play each other, and I believe that the 2 and 7 and I don't know exactly how it lines up, but either way, all you really need to know is there will be 14 teams now instead of 12 and only one bye team. What do you think of this new playoff format?
I'm excited for change, and I really hope that this brings an end to at least a shortened preseason. Would very much like that to happen. My major thing is that I really enjoyed how the NFL's playoffs were already set up. If they were going to make a change, I would have preferred it been how the seedings are made. I would just make it seeding by record. I don't think that if a team is 8-8 and wins their division, they deserve a home playoff game versus a team potentially that went 12-4 and came second in theirs. I don't think that should work out that way, but I'm excited for change. We'll see how it goes. I'm going to hold my opinion on it until after I see how it's actually enacted and work.
Yeah, I don't agree with it at all. along with the playoff changes, would come a 17-game regular season per team. I'm very against that.
I'm against that as well.
I'm kind of with you. I've liked the way that the NFL playoffs work. I don't think there is a need for change. And quite frankly, I don't really want to see, you know, an 8-8 team make the playoffs. Because let's think – let me pull up the NFL standings really quick for last season.
Adam Schefter said it would have been the Steelers and the Rams.
Right. And – sure, the Rams got hot at the end of the year, but I do not want to see an 8-8 Mason Rudolph-led Steelers team make it into the playoffs. And there's a potential scenario where if everyone cannibalized each other, like they did this year in the AFC at least, a 7-9 team could make it, which means the Jets would have had a shot to make it in, and the Colts would have had a shot to make it into the playoffs. I really disagree with adding an extra team, because that team, I just feel like they're going to get blown out by the better teams. And then it's also a way where you're an easy out for ownership, where if you get in as an 8-8 team, your owner can point to it and say, hey, we made the playoffs. But 8-8 is not an acceptable NFL season, I would argue, from like, that is not a good record. Like, you should not be awarded a playoff team for being an 8-8 team unless your division is just that god-awful. Like, I'm sorry for taking shots here, Matt, like the NFC East was this year. So, I really disagree with the whole, with the entire proposed changes, and I really hope things don't shuffle up.
Yeah, I also think that my biggest concern, too, is if it adds an extra week of the postseason, there's going to be one extra game regardless. You're kind of giving another opportunity for, you know, a potential season-altering injury.
Yeah.
And that's just worrisome to me.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it completely changes the way, if it's a 17-week season, how teams attack it. Because I also don't think it's good, because imagine you are a, say, 14-1 team going into week 16. Now, instead of just not playing your good players for 1 week, I would argue that most NFL teams are if you're 14-1 at that point, wouldn't you just bench your best players for the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, and that's worrisome too, is then you're really making football itself worse. I also just don't think – like, I'm okay if they wanted to make it an 18-game season, 17, 18, even 19. Like, I'm okay with it if you're adding things like an extra bye, a shortened preseason, larger rosters. Like, I think there's a ton of ways that you can go about extending a season. I just don't think that this is the most efficient and the safest way.
I know that it's an unpopular opinion to have, but I personally don't need that much more football. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. Do you feel that way? I feel like the amount they have now is perfect. Like, if I see a record that is 8-8, I can tell that you were a perfectly mediocre football team. But if this increases and suddenly we're going to have like 8-9 teams and 9-8 teams, like, that gets, I don't know, that just gets a little bit confusing to me. Mm-hmm. I just feel like there's no need. I don't know, maybe that makes me sound like I don't like football. I love football, but I really don't feel the need for more than 16 weeks. I think the season is perfect where it is.
I don't think that, like, I'm, like I said, I'm cool with having a extended regular season as long as they're taking the right steps for it. I feel like this isn't that. This isn't giving us more football, and it's a benefit to the league at all, right? Like, it's just, it doesn't make a ton of sense to me overall. If it was like, it's just weird. If they added two new playoff teams, and the top two seeds still got a bye and stuff like that, then maybe I could get behind it. But overall, this, if the seven games in the playoffs is weird, the it's I'm not a fan of it overall. Now, I could be wrong, and it could turn out to be really awesome, and extra playoff football is always cool, but at what cost are we sacrificing a lot? So I'm just – I'm dubious to how this is going to work out.
Yeah, and especially if with that 17-week season, they are saying giving out two bye weeks and giving – I've heard this proposal of like a star player bye week. I think that is totally stupid. Like,
That one's just ridiculous. I agree.
That defeats the purpose of the NFL. Like, why would you sit in? I feel like part of the problem, if we're talking about comparing it to other sports, like the MLB and NBA have ratings problems right now, I would argue, because their seasons are too long. Like, I don't know about, like, I have an NBA team here in Salt Lake, so I follow the Jazz really closely throughout the whole year, but I would argue casual sports fans don't really start watching the NBA until like right about now, till late February, early March, because things just kind of don't tend to matter until then. And I just don't want that to happen with the NFL. And the same thing with baseball too. Like, no one watches, unless you're a diehard fan with a team in your market, no one watches all 162 or whatever it is baseball games. Most people start watching on July 4th and then just end up watching through August until football starts.
Yeah, for me, it's a lot of background noise. I keep it on just to keep it there, but nothing like I have no intent of it actually affect. Like, I have no intention of ever watching 162 games of baseball. I might have like 120 games that are just playing behind me. But with football, it's not like that. I'm very invested in the games. And so I do just think it's strange how I don't think it'll happen like that for football because it's such a polarizing sport. Baseball's a lot of, and also you're never going to get on that 162. Baseball's a lot of the same kind of motions going over and over again. Football, it's, you know, something different all the time. And I love baseball, but it'll be interesting. I also think that one thing that I think might be pushing this is the NFL trying to find a way to make sure that they – I feel like the NFL is trying to put out a message that they are the and will always be the dominant football league. You know, the XFL saw some pretty solid numbers in their opening week. Those numbers did fall pretty dramatically for week two, but – I don't like the idea as a whole, and I'll be interested to see how it comes out.
Yeah, I think that is interesting to think about how the XFL and the emergence of these new leagues is affecting this. It does feel kind of like the NFL wants to put their foot down and kind of squash it out, because if they made the season longer, technically if you add a week and then you add another playoff team, the season – I would imagine the season wouldn't go till the first week of February anymore. It'd go till like the second or third week, probably, of February. I'd imagine they'd have to push the Super Bowl back like a week or two.
Yeah, or they might have to start sooner. Now, I also do think, like I said, that a preseason game likely gets cut. But overall, I don't know how it's going to work out. It's worrisome. I think the NFL is kind of rushing into this. I would like them to take more time, at least wait to implement until next year, and make sure that they're thinking every avenue out, every possibility, everything like that.
Awesome. So that was kind of the biggest news of the day. So now we're going to get into some signings. Before we talk about this free agent list, and I just wanted to bring up a few quick things. Drew Brees announced he was returning, which means from everything he said that he is planning to re-sign with the Saints. What do you think about this, Matt?
I think it's great because I don't have to get subjected to Taysom Hill trying to play quarterback.
I like Taysom Hill. What do you – I want to ask you this, Ben, seriously. Sure. What do you think his – ceiling is.
He would be the worst starting quarterback in the NFL.
Okay.
So Taysom Hill is a fun and solid football player. He's a good piece. He works well out of multiple spots. He works well as a wildcat quarterback, as a tight end, as a fullback, as a receiver. Like, this is what Taysom Hill's game is. Taysom Hill has less career attempted passes than Mohamed Sanu.
Hmm.
Right. There are players in the XFL who had more college passes than Taysom Hill with better statistics. One would be PJ Walker out of Temple. And there's a lot that I just don't think makes sense. And Taysom Hill is at the top of the list. The idea of him trying to be a quarterback, he would be the worst. Like, I fully believe that Taysom Hill would be the worst quarterback to ever start a football game, because he's not meant to be a guy who's going to throw the football 25 times a game. Now, if the Saints completely transformed their offense and they only threw the ball 10 times a game, then sure, like, that would be fun. But in the way the NFL is moving, you would get obliterated every game. You would lose by 20.
Hmm.
You can't keep up exclusively running the football and throwing the football 10 times a game. It just doesn't work out that way.
Right. I kind of disagree on that. I feel like, do I think he'd be one of the best quarterbacks in the league? No. But I think he could be like a passable, like, if we're ranking quarterbacks, like 16 to 20.
I
just feel like that's where he'd be. I know that there are questions with him throwing, but I feel like he threw the ball well in college. And maybe that's just because I watched him at BYU a lot. But I just feel like, I don't know. I do feel like if he ever got a shot, he might work for – I agree, not a long-term guy. But, like, a year or two, I could see him being successful in the NFL before teams kind of figured it out.
Here's my thought process, right? Like, you say 20. He's not – I don't think he's better than Philip Rivers, Russell. Like, I could go down the list, and I genuinely think that I can name 30-plus quarterbacks in the NFL that I would rather start week one of next year than I would with Taysom Hill. Even guys down to, like, Mitch Trubisky – Jameis Winston, who I'm noticeably low on. You go through my Twitter feed, it's nothing but me. They are at least
really. I would take what Taysom Hill currently is over Mitch Trubisky.
I wouldn't ever. He's not refined. His accuracy is not there. And honestly, I hope that he does one day start a game and he has a game of 25 plus passes, so that this argument kind of dies. But I genuinely don't think Taysom Hill can play quarterback in the NFL. And I don't think Taysom Hill can play quarterback in the XFL or anywhere else.
Really?
He's not a great quarterback. He's not a good quarterback.
I think he dominates. I think he dominates. Teddy
Bridgewater started. I think he would be a great runner.
I feel like he would dominate in the XFL. And I'll put you back on that one. I feel like he would be good in the XFL.
I think PJ Walker is better than him right now. I think Cardale Jones is better. As a passer, let me point this out.
No way Cardale Jones is better at passing than Taysom.
Have you watched any XFL games?
I have, but Cardale Jones is like a car wreck. The only XFL games I've watched. You said
Taysom Hill was not bad at BYU, using that as your defense for him. Cardale Jones was elite at Ohio State.
Yeah, but he's a car wreck. Now, even in the XFL, some of the throws that guy makes are like
– versus Taysom Hill. Yeah, but Taysom Hill's not even – this is how I look at it. The Saints had five games this year where Drew Brees was not playing football.
Okay.
And Taysom Hill did not get an opportunity to start any of them.
That's a fair point.
Now, I don't know what that tells you about Taysom Hill. It tells me that, A, they don't believe him. And I never bought the thing that Sean Payton thinks he could be a franchise quarterback, because he really didn't. Otherwise, he would never have signed Teddy Bridgewater.
So are you one of the people that believes this, and this is a pretty popular like conspiracy theory, I guess, that Sean Payton is putting that out there because they want to get like a second round tender for Taysom Hill?
No, my thought process is that Sean Payton said that so that people wouldn't be totally worried had Drew Brees retired. It would also give him some leverage in a negotiation with Brees, as they are going to have to come to terms on the contract. It gives Sean Payton some leverage, him saying that, oh, hey, well, I did say that I think Taysom can be that guy, so if you're going to ask for $30 million, we'll just roll with Taysom. If that was to happen, I do think that Teddy Bridgewater would just be a Saint, and they would roll with Teddy. I don't – like, if Drew Brees leaves New Orleans, I don't think Taysom Hill starts the first game of next year. I think Sean Payton would roll with Teddy Bridgewater.
I think it'll be interesting to see how the game plan works, because I think for the first time in, like, a long, long time since, like, the 1980s, we could see a legitimate two-quarterback game plan with Taysom Hill and Drew Brees, because – I think Taysom Hill can throw deep right now better than Drew Brees can. And what if
so this is my thought process. People think that Taysom Hill can throw deep because he had a deep ball against the Vikings, but that ball wasn't a good throw. He underthrew it by 5 yards. It was a great adjustment by the wide receiver. It would have been an easy walk-in touchdown had Taysom been able to hit it accurately. Hmm. Now, his arm right now might be stronger than Drew Brees's, yes, but Drew Brees on every level of the field in every single throw, regardless of where it's on the field, is going to be more accurate than Taysom Hill. Because Taysom Hill is not an accurate thrower of the football at all.
I guess my point is I'm a big fan of fun, and I hope that Taysom Hill – I hope this debate does get settled. I hope that they use Taysom Hill a bit more in the passing game this year, and he gets to throw maybe 10 passes a game, and we'll actually see what.
Now, I do want to point out, I am 1-0 in our quarterback arguments.
What was our
Your thought that Luke Falk was one of the 30 best quarterbacks in the NFL.
Oh yeah, I don't remember that. I don't remember that. I know I probably never said that. Man, looking back, that was dumb to say. I don't know why I even. You must have baited me into saying that.
No,
there's
no
way my own brain thought Luke Falk was.
You might. It might have said. Let me.
Do you save all these things?
No, I you definitely mentioned it. I can go through
No. You don't have to. But I'm sure I probably said something like that. I occasionally say dumb things about quarterbacks. It was probably because someone – the debate probably started with Trevor Siemian, because I'm like the biggest Trevor Siemian fan in the entire world and – think he's massively underlooked as a backup quarterback, which I've changed on, by the way. His stint with the Jets.
I lied. I'm sorry.
Oh, so really?
We were talking about, well, yeah, instead of top 30, you said top 40.
Okay. I was like, that does not sound like me. Oh, yeah. Luke Falk's not even a top 60 quarterback, though. Yes. So you are right. You are 1-0.
We had talked about the Pac-12, and you said that Jacob Eason was not the best quarterback. Was not the second best quarterback in the Pac-12. It was Anthony Gordon.
Ah, yes. That was before Anthony Gordon fell off the rails.
I hate Anthony Gordon as the player. He is not good.
yeah, he kind of fell off the rails.
Evaluating Mike Leach quarterbacks regardless.
Yeah.
To which you responded saying that Luke Falk and Gardner Minshew are both top 40 NFL quarterbacks.
I still think Gardner Minshew's
top 40 quarterback. I'll give you that,
NFL
yeah.
NFL quarterback. Sure.
Luke Falk is not. I said 60 to 80 category.
Yeah, and that's probably where he belongs. He's probably the 60th best quarterback in the NFL. Maybe the 63rd. Because
would you make him the best third stringer in the NFL?
Okay, I could see that. Well, I disagree with even that.
Yeah, because like the Redskins had Colt McCoy as their third stringer.
Yeah, I'd say Colt McCoy's better than Luke Falk. Man, at least Luke Falk – speaking of bad quarterbacks, man, there is just nothing quite like turning on an XFL game and watching Matt McGloin throw picks to the linebackers.
Yeah, that one was brutal. Shout out my defenders. They caught the W.
Yeah. I have chosen the defenders as my team to root for as well, mainly because of, Barstool Sports personality PFT Commenter trying out to be a kicker, which I thought was a hilarious bit. So that's why I jumped on the DC Defenders. But they're pretty okay. Pep Hamilton's a good coach. So
Pep Hamilton could be my offensive coordinator. Oh. And I legitimately think he'll get a shot at being offensive coordinator in the NFL within the next couple of years.
It'll be interesting
to
see.
He did a really good job taking the rules and kind of blending his game plan.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, I think, how these XFL teams deal on the road, because I do feel like the road teams struggle in these games. It'll be interesting to see how DC travels. But anyways, that was a long tangent on one piece of news, that Drew Brees is planning on re-signing with the Saints. In other news, Greg Olsen is signing with the Seattle Seahawks on a one-year deal. I personally love this move, Matt. I know that he's not the best tight end out there, but I think that Russell Wilson made every one of his tight ends look like top 10 tight ends. And I feel like if Greg Olsen can stay healthy, he can provide a nice little shot there. And I think Russell Wilson's favorite target has always been and will always be his tight end. And I think Greg Olsen's a good signing in Seattle.
I like the move for Greg Olsen. I do kind of question the move for Seattle. Will Disley looked really, really good.
Yeah.
Looked like a top 10 tight end when he was healthy, but he has had some troubles staying healthy. Jacob Hollister filled in really nicely for him. Yeah. And so I think bringing Greg Olsen makes it a bit crowded, and bringing him in on a $7.5 million contract is a little bit steep for a team that I think has a lot of needs before they're going to be able to contend for Super Bowl, which they should be looking to do every year as they have Russell Wilson. And so, you know, I think they should have spent some of that money elsewhere, looking on, you know, an offensive line. Am I upset about the signing? Not at all. You went out and got a good player and a great veteran leader, someone who's going to help your team. But $7.5 million is a little steep for an older tight end, and I didn't really think it was a major need at the position.
All right. Let's get into this free agent list. I want to quickly, at first, pick your brain. Let's start with offensively. Okay. Of the number one positions, leaving tight end out of it, because I think the number one tight end I have. Well, by the way, if you want to take a look at this list, it's on dramaofitallsportsblog.com, my sports website that I occasionally write things for. The tight end number one I have is Austin Hooper. I think he's leaving. But the three that I have at quarterback, running back, and wide receiver, Amari Cooper, Derrick Henry, and Dak Prescott. Of those three players, who do you think is the most likely to lead the team they are currently on?
Probably Derrick Henry. From what I can tell, the Titans aren't real interested in giving him a 16-plus. Because he is trying to start at Zeke's contract and move from there. I don't think it's smart to sign running backs anyways, because I don't think the position entirely matters. I think the Titans also believe that they can kind of, because their offensive line is so strong, that they can bring in a new quarterback or a new running back, maybe spend their like 29th pick or whatever it is on a guy like a Jonathan Taylor or a DeAndre Swift and get similar production. I mean, maybe not similar as, you know, Henry was excellent this year, but similar value at the spot for noticeably cheaper.
Yeah, I've kind of changed my thought on running backs as well. I think paying them is usually a mistake. They've got to change the CBA, in my opinion. I think that running backs should be able to have one-year rookie contracts, and then you have to basically pay them. Because you're right, the second contracts for running backs rarely, if ever, work out. So, yeah, I think that's interesting. But I would ponder about Amari Cooper a bit, honestly. I just feel like he might be a guy that hits free agency. I know that they really want to keep both of them, and they could throw the transition tag on him. But I just feel like Jerry's waited a little bit too long in the negotiations, and he's going to lose out on somebody, and I think Amari Cooper might be the guy that he loses out on.
So my best guess for what I expect the Cowboys to do currently is Dak's going to get a long-term deal. He's going to be the highest-paid quarterback in the NFL. Amari Cooper's going to get the franchise tag so that they have more time to work on a long-term deal, and then Byron Jones is going to leave in free agency. Like, that's how I envision it playing out right now.
That's interesting. There have been kind of several reports from NFL reporters that I follow closely, namely Greg Rosenthal of NFL.com and what he's heard from Ian Rappaport, that seems to think that long-term deal with Dak isn't going to get done and they'll end up franchise tagging Dak, which I think is, I don't know. Have you heard, and what makes you think they might be able to get a long-term deal done before
because,
that happens?
So they've watched the fiascos of the Kirk Cousins, and at the end of the day, they were able – I mean, they went out and made Tony Romo the highest-paid quarterback at one point. So I do – Now, he could get tagged again. I don't know for sure. Obviously, I'm not an insider. I don't have any information. It's just that my guess right now is that it'll get to a point where prior to the open market, prior to the trade deadline, Jerry Jones will be like, all right, here's the money. Let's go play some football. Let's go hopefully win a Super Bowl.
Okay. I mean, that's a fair argument as well. I just think they might use the tag on him. Let's talk quickly about wide receivers, because I think it's a really interesting year for wide receivers in general, because again, I don't know much about the draft, but I know the base level that an idiot would know about the draft. And I know that this wide receiver class is probably the most stacked it's been in 10, 15 years, question mark.
Yes. But what's insane is next year's class is better, just in case anyone wanted to know. It's kind of ridiculous. I'm not as high on the depth of this class. Like, a lot of people think it's, like, super deep. You're going to get – and I think you get productive players, but I think there's – after the top three wide receivers, which is a dominant group, I do have some questions as to just how good the rest of the class can be.
So I want to ask you, what are your first kind of impressions of how I have the wide receivers ranked here?
So I think Amari Cooper, number one, is kind of the obvious. He's the far and away the best. Then you've got this group of older vets. I don't know that I would have Randall Cobb this high. I'm not sure how much value he brings. He's fourth overall on your list. I'm not sure how much value he brings outside of a slot receiver. I do think that people are forgetting just how dominant AJ Green is when he's healthy. And so I do like that you have him there. And honestly, if I can guarantee that he's going to be healthy enough for training camp when I sign him, I would have him as my number two. The DeMarcus Robinson, so that after Robbie Anderson at five, there is a noticeable drop-off. I think DeMarcus Robinson benefited from playing on the Chiefs, so he gets a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. But I think Philip Dorsett has been, and Geronimo Allison have been just more productive receivers to this point in their career. Though I don't think either of them are someone that you should look at and expect them to be major producers on any team.
Right. I just love DeMarcus Robinson because I agree that he probably benefits from playing on the Chiefs, but his speed is undeniable. Mm-hmm. And like he is like almost as fast as Tyreek Hill. So I just feel like he brings kind of a deep threat to any offense that he would be able to play in. I view him kind of in the same way I view Robbie Anderson, just a little bit. He's not the greatest wide receiver ever, but he's one hell of a deep threat when he gets going. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's kind of where I have him ranked. I have Randall Cobb so high because you're right. He is only a slot receiver right now, but he is a hell of a slot receiver. There were points last year when Amari Cooper was dealing with injury or being benched or whatever, where Randall Cobb was helping move the chains for that offense. And I just feel like he could be valuable still on any team that decides to pick him up.
I think Cobb's a good player. I just don't think I would value him above Anderson.
Mm. Yeah, I just – part of the reason Anderson's at 5'2 is kind of the off-field concerns and things like that.
I do think Anderson's going to get entirely overpaid.
Mm.
I don't think he's as good as the contract he apparently wants and might garner. But if it's a list off pure just ability or where the receivers are right now, I would take Robbie Anderson over Randall Cobb.
All right. Of the offensive positions I have listed here, which group do you think is the deepest?
It's got to be quarterbacks. I mean, this is one of the more insane free agent quarterback classes we've ever seen. Now, the odds of all of these dudes hitting the open market are slim to none. My guess right now is that up to four of the top guys in Prescott, Tannehill, Breeze, and Brady all stay with their respective teams.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see what happens with Tom Brady. I do think that the Raiders are a real threat there. Especially if they just throw him, like, basically say, hey, Tom, we'll make you the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, which I think is a dumb thing to do. But also, I don't know, but the Raiders with Tom Brady, I could kind of get behind that. I think that the Raiders and Patriots are similar talent-wise at wide receiver. It'll be really interesting. I feel like the deal has got to get done before free agency because I feel like Tom Brady, if he hits the open market, I feel like it's kind of over, if that makes sense. Because I think what he wants them to do is – prove to him that they're going to get weapons, and I guess you could sit on the open market for a few days and see if the Patriots go after one of these top wide receivers, but I don't know. I just feel like if he hits the open market, it might kind of be open season, which is why I tend to think the Patriots might get something done before free agency starts.
Yeah,
even though
that's
Robert
what
Kraft has said opposite.
If Prescott, Tannehill, Breeze, and Brady all remain with their teams, I would expect it to be because they got a deal done prior to free agency.
Yeah. Which, the deadline's coming up here, right? There's only like three more weeks until that
ends, right? Yeah, I was
going to say,
there's still a little bit of time.
Yeah. Yeah, but still, next week's a combine, dude. I can't even believe that.
Best season of the football. Best part of football.
I want to ask you, how do you value Jameis Winston and Phillip Rivers? Because I think both those guys are really interesting cases in that I have them ranked 6 and 7, but I could see the argument for flipping that either way.
So I think it also depends on like where I'm at as a team. If I'm expecting, like, if my team can contend, I'm a team like the Colts. I'm going to take Phillip Rivers 10 out of 10 times just because I think the odds of him giving me an opportunity to win football games is higher than that of Jameis Winston, who is more prone to lose a football game. Now, they're similar quarterbacks in the idea that they are very turnover prone. They are willing to give their guys a chance, but sometimes it's at a bad cost. If I'm a team just looking to remain competitive and I need a stopgap at quarterback, I'd look at Jameis. Like, maybe if the Cowboys can't get a deal done with Dak and they miss out on some of the top guys, obviously the likelihood of that happening is low, but that's what I would do. If I'm a team and I have to sign one of them, I would take Phillip Rivers.
I'd just like to point out that Phillip Rivers and Jameis Winston are more similar than people think. Like,
yes, I agree.
Phillip Rivers threw 20 interceptions this year. That's awful. Like, he was awful this year at points. And I know that they lost a ton of close games, but the reason they lost a ton of close games was because he threw some killer picks throughout the entire year. So, I don't know. I feel like Phillip Rivers is a guy that – it's kind of buyer beware. I feel like the Colts might be a nice fit, but I think you should have someone behind him just in case. You got to draft someone as well, I think, if you're going to roll Phillip Rivers out there, because I don't envision him playing in 2021. I really don't. I think this is it for him. This is his last year. And I feel the same way about Drew Brees, for that matter. I think both of them are, this is the last year we see them. So, yeah, that's interesting. But Jameis is really, really interesting to me. I just wonder if, I don't know, maybe I'm a sucker for this whole LASIK story. Maybe he improves somehow that way. It's just, I feel like it's, if you are a team that is just throwing stuff at the wall and you need a quarterback, I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, and there's worse options than Jameis, but I don't think Jameis will ever – the only way Jameis ever wins a playoff game is as a backup and someone else winning the game. I don't see Jameis as a guy who's going to win a lot of games for your team.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. Let's quickly shift gears now and talk – kind of about the defensive side. Of the defensive spots I have, which one do you think is the deepest?
Along the defensive, so my thing is, So some of them are weird, like Chris Jones, Leonard Williams, even like Eric Armstead and Gerald McCoy are listed under defensive end because technically that's what they play in a 3-4, which is what they were in. Mm-hmm. But they're technically interior. That's why like DE and D tackle are kind of the weird for me. I prefer IDL and edge.
Oh, okay.
So personally, I would say the edge rush class, the traditional defensive ends in a 4-3 or the 3-4 outside linebackers, because at the top you've got Yannick Ngakoue, who I think is better than Jadeveon Clowney by a pretty fair margin. And then after that, you've got Jadeveon Clowney, you've got Shaquille Barrett, who actually didn't make the list, which is kind of impressive. Do you not like Shaquille Barrett?
Oh, no. I have him ranked as a linebacker.
Oh, under linebackers. Oh, okay. So, yeah, it's just – sorry. So
he's the number one linebacker for me.
Yeah.
And I didn't separate interior and outside linebackers, which I later realized was an oversight.
Yeah, so personally, it, like when I do evaluations, I do interior defensive line, edge rushers, and then linebackers. So edge rushers are everything that's a 3-4 outside linebacker and a 4-3 defensive end. Interior defensive line would be 4-3 defensive tackles and then 3-4 defensive ends typically and 3-4 nose tackles. So that's just how I do it. But the edge rush, I mean, you get Shaq Barrett, Jadeveon Clowney, Eric Armstead does a little bit of that, Robert Quinn's a great player. And then even gets down to like Bud Dupree, Dante Fowler can all play. Kyle Van Noy, Matt Judon, like Marcus Golden. There's a lot of talent at that edge rush position that we haven't seen in a while. I don't know how many are going to hit the open market. I know Yannick Ngakoue is, and that's going to be a great signing for whoever it is. Right. I know Cowboys are very interested in bringing Robert Quinn back. Mm-hmm. So there is some stuff like that, that's what I think maybe the deepest class in the entire free agency is.
All right. So moving on, I had a question for you. I wanted to talk about this safety class and specifically the top two, because I am a Broncos fan. So I do feel like I had a little bit of, there might have been a little bit of bias having Justin Simmons at number one, because I would argue that Von Bell did not get enough love this year and was one of the most underrated defensive players in the entire NFL. I honestly thought, especially through the stretches where Drew Brees was injured and that defense was really playing at its peak, that he was playing, especially coverage-wise, at like a all-pro level.
I mean, I think Justin Simmons was just better personally this year. Mm-hmm. I think Von Bell's been better throughout the entirety of his career. Like, I think Von Bell came into the league a stronger player. But Justin Simmons played at – was quite literally arguably the best safety in football this year.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Now, that being said, there are some other guys on the list, like a Devin McCourty, who's still an elite player, and I think Trey Boston would probably be another guy who I would put in the top four. Mm-hmm. And one person who actually didn't make the list, who I think is an elite player, is Anthony Harris, who – He was on the Vikings, probably the fifth best safety in this class, and was excellent this year. Has some issues with inconsistencies, but is a great spark plug player. He's always there to make the play and energize the defense, and that's exciting. So he's someone that I would also say to look out for. Other than that, like, I like the safety class. However, I don't expect it to change much. I've been told that there is no way Justin Simmons hits the open market if he doesn't get a long-term deal with the Broncos before free agency. He will be getting franchise tagged.
Right.
Consensus. So I would expect the high, and then I would also expect Devin McCourty to stay a Patriot, and I would expect Von Bell likely to stay a Saint. So my guess is that the highest paid safety will probably be a Trey Boston or an Anthony Harris. Now, the issue is the safety market had been super, super dry. You were seeing guys like Eric Reed, Trey Boston. You were seeing guys not get signed until halfway through minicamp and get signed for like very, very small deals despite them being impact players. And then last year, Landon Collins and Tyrann Mathieu seemingly completely reset the market for the position. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of what contracts these guys get, because if it's anything like last offseason, they'll be getting paid much more than in previous years.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the secondary in general is interesting. Cornerback, there's no one that's a shutdown corner, but also no one that's a liability either. They're just all really solid, I would say, like number two corners within the class. I feel like the secondary is kind of, if you, the defensive class, I would argue, free agent wise, is much stronger this year than the offensive class. Would you agree?
Yes, I would.
Yeah. So I just feel like if you need a pass rusher, even if you need an interior linebacker like Joe Schobert, who I think has been a top five middle linebacker over the past 2.5 years, I feel like you have got some real guys that are going to hit the market, and it'll be interesting to see how free agency plays out this year.
Yeah. And I also think there's, you know, a truly elite cornerback in Byron Jones that's available. Mm. And then you've also got guys like Chris Harris Jr., who's a vet but still plays at a very high level when in the slot and when in the right position would be good. Those two guys are definitely someone to keep an eye on. The interior linebacker class, too, has names in like Joe Sherman, Blake Martinez, Corey Littleton. I do think they may get paid a little more than they should. But overall, I do think that this is actually a very good defensive class.
Yeah.
Headlined by stars in – like Byron Jones hitting the open market shouldn't happen. Like, it's going to be kind of insane that one of the three probably best pure cover corners in the NFL is going to be a free agent is ridiculous.
Hmm. See, I did not have him that high, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we definitely differ on – like, I don't think James Bradbury is the best corner. Like, so here's my issue. Byron Jones gets a lot of flag because he doesn't force a lot of turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
However, the only cornerback over the past 3 years – let's say 2 years because I think he really came on last year. The only cornerback over the past 2 years that has been better on a down-to-down basis than Byron Jones is Stephon Gilmore.
Wow.
Yeah, Jones is in elite cover corner, great athletic abilities. No, he doesn't force a lot of turnovers, but that's okay if you're completely neutralizing another receiver, an option. James Bradbury is – and I actually watched 6 of Bradbury's games from this past year because there's a lot of connections to the Redskins. They have a need at cornerback. Ron Revere is there now. So there is, like, connections or thoughts that James Bradbury could be signed by the Redskins, and I don't like that idea at all. He's not – I don't think he's at all worth the $12 to $14 million he may be getting paid.
Right.
Very bad inconsistently. Was actually one of the worst cornerbacks in the NFL playing on the right side. So people talk about him as if he's potentially a, you know, number one corner who can follow everywhere. He actually gave up over a 90% – or a 90-point quarterback rating when playing on the right side of the defense, or technically the right side of the offense. So that leads me – to believe that he's exclusively a left side cornerback.
Mm-hmm.
Byron Jones, I think, can go to either side and play excellently. I think Chris Harris Jr. is still a premier slot corner and maybe still the best in the NFL, aside from, you know, a couple guys. I forget who the Steelers guy is who was awesome, Steven Nelson. But overall, yeah, I think, I mean, Byron Jones to me is easily one of the 5 best cornerbacks in the NFL and then the best corner in this class.
The Chiefs have 2 guys in that cornerback list that might go, and let's close on this. If you had to pick between Bristrod Breeland and Kyle Fuller, who would you keep?
So it's actually Kendall Fuller on the Chiefs.
Oh, Kendall Fuller.
Kyle Fuller's on the Bears. It depends. Bashad Breeland is – so they were both former Redskins, fun little fact. Breeland's an elite run-defending cornerback with solid length and plays on the outside. Kendall Fuller does his best work on the interior. So I think Breeland's probably better suited for Kansas City, mm-hmm. as Tyrann Mathieu can kind of take over slot duties and is very good in that spot. But overall, I think Kendall Fuller's the better player, but I think Breeland would be a bigger loss for that Chiefs team.
Right. Well, I wanted to finish up with just your top five overall offensive line players who would might be available in free agency.
Okay, so the first two are both guards, in Brandon Scherff as number one and Joe Thuney number two. Two of the 5 to 8 best guards in football. And Joe Thuney hitting the open market. I don't expect Brandon Scherff to hit the open market totally. He'll probably end up getting tagged, but there's no information on it yet and no conclusive evidence to assume so. So there is a still, I would say, 50-50 shot that he makes it. I do expect Joe Thuney to hit the open market. Followed by that, I think Anthony Costanzo, he's mulling retirement, but he's only like 30, 31, I believe. He's been excellent for the Colts. He's been consistent. He's kind of in that range of like the top 8 to 12 tackles, and that's not something you can commonly get. He's 32. That was incorrect. And then after that, it's kind of this group of guys. There's, you know, Graham Glasgow out of Detroit, Halapului Vati Vaitai out of Philadelphia, Ron Leary from Denver, Jack Conklin, Darrell Williams out of Carolina. So I think there are options, but I think the top three are very obviously Scherff, Thuney, and Costanzo.
Awesome. Well,
or even like older tackles like an Andrew Whitworth or Jason Peters.
Absolutely. Well, Matt, thank you very much for joining us. It's always a ton of fun to have you on. Your breadth of knowledge is always extremely impressive to me, especially with the offensive line stuff. I really appreciate helping me out with that. So hopefully our listeners now have a better understanding of what players are available here in free agency. Where can people find you on Twitter, Matt?
Please go follow me on Twitter at MV Scouting. Shoot me any takes you have, and if you want to talk about them, always open ears. Go check out my work over at the Pro Football Network, and then check out my podcast, the Blue Chip Scouting NFL Podcast, on SoundCloud, Apple, or Spotify.
All right, fantastic. We will be back later this week, I think, with a little bit of a combine preview. And then we will be back early next week talking about some of the combine press conferences. Thank you very much, Matt. We follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. We will see you guys next time. Peace out. Follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. If you have any suggestions, questions, or you just want a shout out on the pod, send an email to endzonepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.